Welcome back, players and listeners, to another session in our post-podcast discussions I'm calling The End of Dead Men Roll No Crits. This is Patrick, your former GM, and I'm joined once more this week by the intrepid, the decrepit, Jabert, Rebecca, Seth, and Tyler. How are you guys?
Wow.
Yeah, you got the epids.
Good. Yeah, I like it. We're great. I mean, I'm great. I don't know about these guys. I think they're good. They seem good.
Well, you've gone from great to good.
I mean, they seem fine. I mean, they're not dead yet.
So. Actually, most of them look like, but you know, I'm great.
Yes, I do liked my haircut.
Tyler's a little green, but he's probably going to be fine.
Yeah, the chains that are keeping me to the desk are beginning to
rub
in. And,
all right, Tyler, no one is forcing
you to be here and talking about pirates. You love it. This whole thing was your idea.
don't lay that blame at my feet, Ricky Bobby. Don't you dare.
Just looking around our rooms, and only one of us has a bunch of pirate stuff up on his wall. So I don't know. It's this stuff on my wall.
That's why I have a pirate podcast. Yeah. If only someone had more pirate tattoos than me, so I could hoist this blame over to them.
Yeah, so we've had a few weeks of episodes where we did one-on-one kind of post podcast chats, but I wanted to bring everyone together to talk, maybe get a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of the characters of this podcast, the world that they jumped into 4 years ago when we started, and how things changed over time, because we had a pretty big change in how we record podcasts, how we play these games. And, you know, part of that was making the A team, the B team. Before we get like super bogged down, just a quick question, just answer honestly. First thing pops into your mind, besides your own character,
grilled cheese sandwich.
Of the player characters, who's your favorite character?
I have one.
Well, Pindoso, I mean, everyone favorite. Should have one, but sorry, who was that? Rebecca?
Pindoso.
Pindoso. Okay. Excellent. Really like excellent. Pindoso.
And I was jealous of his ability to transform into beings, like animals and stuff.
Yeah, you got to play Druid. It's a ton of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's real fun. Okay. Who wants to go next?
If I had to go with just like I like a lot of the characters for a lot of reasons, but if I gun to my head had to pick a favorite, it'd probably be Bartleby. not to give Javert two wins necessarily, but you know, Bartleby, I don't know. Was there's just first. Something really fun about
he had insider information. He's already played the AP, so
right.
so he cheated. Got it.
Whoa!
Well,
whoa.
Less I kidding, like.
I took that, all the fun for myself.
Just more.
He literally read the books before we started playing. Sorry, Seth. Go ahead.
That's fine. I don't know. Just the idea of having like, this timid gnomish accountant that is a cleric.
Yeah. Oh man, it was just
weird.
It was so nice when the counting came up. It was very rare, but when it did, oh boy, was I ready for it.
That count lore.
I honestly kind of wish that we found more ways to utilize it. like, it, you know, because as an example of like C-team, like players would ply the use of their various skills in absolutely ridiculous and insane ways. And oftentimes it would just be like, sure, why not? just like why not, we're going with it.
We could have had this like an entire bottle episode that was just a whodunit, because Bartleby was like, the books don't balance, someone
like, that, yeah, yeah, off the yeah. top
a you have pirate to find who out, steals
you have to find out who's screwing up. Probably just end up being Honto, like paying too much because he doesn't understand what money is. Like, it wasn't malicious, he wasn't stealing.
Yeah.
He's just
dumb. Down whatever number he feels like.
He's just dumb.
Yeah, it's just like over the course of it, we find out that Cassius has committed all these frauds, but that wasn't what threw off the books. It was just Honto.
Right. They were both making mistakes the opposite direction. Like, they were missing like 100 gold pieces. It turns out we're like thousands off.
Jabert, you've had a lot of accolades for your characters. You can't pick your own. Who's your favorite character?
Let's see.
I didn't like any of them.
I'm always so jealous. Whenever I'm not playing a rogue and somebody else is, I'm always jealous of them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, look at all the stuff they get to do. I want to do that stuff.
I even forgot about stuff. I had to build it into my macro because I forgot all the time.
There's so much stuff. Yeah. So much stuff to do. Yeah. I'm not covetous of Ilaris, but Ilaris was pretty rad and she's pretty swashbuckling. And, you know, did that super cool sword play and it was a lot of fun. That was, and during the first time I played this, I played a roguish sort of blade person. And
Ravager, I think, was the class.
Slayer was the class.
Slayer, yeah.
That was the combination.
Wicked.
Ranger, rogue.
Well,
it was so rad. But yeah, so I was like, every time I was like watching Ilaris, I was like, oh, yeah, that looks like fun.
Well, I have to give you some credit because you helped me build Ilaris before we started the podcast. I remember we were
hanging out on Zoom that night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler, what about you? You have a favorite?
I shouted it out at the beginning, but it's Sharga, of course. It's like naughty. Yeah, I love Sharga.
Tyler, our characters suck.
I mean, that's true. To be fair, Kovic was number one. Nobody likes his name, period. And that's like he's not winning anything because apparently that. But, you know, I wanted to make someone who didn't talk and didn't do much because I had Cassius and I needed balance. So right. I literally teeter-tottered the character. But
I did the same thing with Ozzy, honestly.
I mean, I like Sharga. Actually, let me. I'll be very specific.
Let me back it up. I don't like Sharga.
Yeah. Sharga, I like Sharga, but what made me even happier about Sharga is how Rebecca played Sharga, because it was like with Ilaris, I felt like Rebecca had a very specific vision that she wanted to fulfill. With Ilaris is this, like, you know, young person who always heard these stories and went off and had to have an adventure of her own and all the ups and downs that came with it. Whereas Sharga was just dragons bad, and like, and everything that came out of that with like her, the whole like loyalty to Cassius, and then, you know, just wanting to always be by, you know, his side, and that, but also like wanting to go off and fight these huge battles and just be this juggernaut for the crew. You know, you just had a lot of fun. You did that crazy orc, deep orc voice, and it was so good. And
to the best of my ability.
Yeah, I think you really got to cut loose, and I think it showed because Sharger was just really fun. And, you know, it was one of those moments where it wasn't just our players who relied on Sharger to be good in battle, but like we relied on Sharga to be to be there as well. And you know, I every time we had a combat where Sharga was in it, I was like, okay, we have this one. I don't have to worry about this one. I gotta worry about wherever she isn't. So yeah, no,
except Sharga that time was, that you died and Sharga was very upset.
That wasn't Sharga's fault though.
I know
there's nothing. I liked it. I also have a huge soft spot for barbarians. And so, you know, a dragon themed barbarian is just rad in all sorts of ways with, you know, and then how many times like the acid damage would come in clutch because there was no resistance to it or whatnot. And,
yeah, there's a really something to be said for a straightforward sort of core character thing. And I think I hate dragons, especially black ones. That was a good. That was a strong choice. Yeah, that was a strong choice.
Yeah, I think I talked to Patrick about this at length on my one-on-one episode, but I found playing Sharga to be really refreshing for that reason, because it was very, like, I guess you could argue that she's sort of two-dimensional because of that, but also it made role-playing so much easier because I didn't have to think through all of the different factors of her personality. Like, she had very clear motivation. It was very easy to stick to that and apply it to almost every situation, you know?
So yeah.
It was nice. I mean, it was refreshing for that reason.
Yeah. And it worked. Like, you know, and things got to be spontaneous with Sharga sometimes where, you know, you didn't feel pressured on, like, you know, decisions you were making or, you know, voices you were giving the character. And Yeah, I was almost bummed out that, you know, Sharker wasn't the original character you made, and we got Alaris later.
I definitely had, as my favorite character, I think Bartleby as well, just because he's a fun, like, shouldn't be here kind of situation. But as GM, I think I had the most fun with Honto, to be fair. Because, you know, Seth, you brought it up in our first retrospective episode. You said you felt bad about making a character that was, you know, a little antithetical to the pirate way of life. But, like, for me, that kind of, you know, hurdle or roadblock opens up a lot of, you know, potential for storytelling in the same ways that some of the other characters that you guys made, especially on A-Team, you know, gave a lot of avenues into exploring this world. I do want to, you know, talk a little bit more about the A-Team characters specifically. In we can start with you, Seth, with Honto. I always saw Honto as kind of the big bruiser, Queequeg-like character, like a little mysterious, a little, you know, working behind the scenes. But did you always envision him being kind of like at odds with a pirate crew, or was it exacerbated because episode one or episode zero, I forget, was like, by the way, you're press ganged. Enjoy book one being under the yoke.
I mean, I had always envisioned him as being, you know, it was always going to take a lot for him to come around to pirates being living through a traumatic event like he did, where he and his lover are captured by pirates, forced to fight, and he's forced to watch him die just so he can get a chance to escape. I mean, it puts some really strong feelings of hatred for pirates and hatred for slavery. Mm-hmm. It's just these things like that were so alien to him and his way of life, and he didn't see any good that could come of it. So it was really challenging coming up with motivations for him to stick around, which, I mean, it's fortunate, if not maybe a little cliche, to have the whole, like, I'm on a path fate has put me on thing, but to have a character that followed it so steadfastly, which I think it allowed for some opportunities for him to surprise people. But like I was alluding to in the episode before this one, I didn't want to. I felt like sometimes I might have been a hurdle, you know, which you said as a GM you enjoyed trying to work around, but I didn't want to be someone who was stopping the other players from doing what they wanted to do just because I was playing a nanny, basically. Well,
no, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, we can't play with paladins because they will never let us, you know, cut loose as a party. And it's like, no, yeah, that makes for, like, good tension and also good checks and balances in a party where you might have a rogue that steals everything, or a witch that is praying to evil gods or sacrificing people. Or I think it's good.
I feel like Honto's stance on things really tempered the party. I mean, who knows what they might have been otherwise, but I think that, you know, kind of kept us all in check of, you know, not just going full-fledged evil pirate path, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
I hope that without Honto, we wouldn't have been a full-fledged evil pirate group.
I mean, probably not, but
yeah. I mean, Alaris never.
I think all of us were sort of, all of our characters were sort of built with some level of morality, for sure. But I don't know. I feel like Honto, especially like the slavery bent, like, you know, lent a certain gravity to it, I guess.
Yeah, you know, playing through this campaign, we talked about it, but definitely didn't, you know, mechanically have anything in the way of alignment for characters specifically, because your alignment for this entire AP was just pirate, you know, do whatever you want kind of thing. And sometimes
I could do a whole 2-hour episode on alignment alone. Like, it's such a tired thing to talk about.
Do not tempt me with another bonus episode. We'll talk all about it. I think there are great guidelines to start a character with, but your decisions once you start actually playing the game should be your alignment. You know, what you do is where you should go. And some people might need some guidance on that. Like I said, I GM a lot of teenagers through Pathfinder at work, which is very rewarding. But there are some people that are like, why don't we just kill this person? Like, why don't we just absolutely murder this, you know, bartender, whatever. And it's like, well, the same reason you don't do that in real life.
There are consequences.
Moving off of Hanto, let me ask you, Jabert, talking about Candoso.
Yeah.
When you made the character, did you foresee that kind of utility in being the only like magic user on board? Did you?
Well, I'll be honest, I didn't realize I was going to be the only magic user.
and then when B team rolled around, you're like,
oh, thank goodness, I'll have some company.
I could do barbarian or something, huh? Oh no, I'm just
gonna. Well, I mean, remember, Oz started out as a witch.
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
We had a lot more in B team, but yeah, just at the start, we had you as our magical, you know, doorway into the PC's world.
I enjoyed that. I've been trying to like challenge myself a little bit with spellcasters to embrace more of the utility of them and not just blast. Although I don't know, I mean, obviously I got pretty blasty there towards the end.
But yeah,
it's hard to do that. It's hard to like sit down and make a spellcaster that does entirely utility things.
Yeah, then, I mean, like, it's...
And not just be like, but if he needs to...
But this one does... But this one does 10d6, so...
That's the thing, though. You feel like such a hero when you have the utility...
The right spell for the right thing, yeah.
And, well, I remember early on, like, you could give people... You were giving people water breathing, which was super clutch in exploring underground caverns. Like, basically, not only useful for the characters themselves, but the players didn't have to do those breath holding rules, you know.
Yeah, like, right,
you're
right,
making
yeah.
things easier for players and characters, which was pretty unique.
I wanted to sort of challenge myself with that a little bit, and so I'm glad that it sounds like I was at least somewhat successful. It was fun. It was, you know, eventually it's, you know, people sort of get enough gear and they get enough sort of workarounds that, like, you're like, okay, yeah, they don't need me to cast flight. They've got it. They've got this under control. But
I can turn into a dragon or what are some of the other animals that you were?
Let's see. So initially I could only turn into like a little creature, you know, like a cat or a mouse or something. No combat. I got animal form sort of turned on pretty early on. That one was pretty cool. That was like, you know, turn into a bear, turn into a
bear doso was pretty classic.
What I love
deck bears. Oh boy. Anybody remember the deck bear?
What I loved about the transforming was the other like the special movement types and so forth like that you would get when you transformed. So like it was just like the transforming also had some utility to it, which was, I don't know, that was really cool. I liked that a lot.
There was one episode when you like changed into a mouse and investigated the. Like, it was on the Isle of Empty Eyes.
Oh, right, yeah. And we went and snuck around. And tried
really
to
handy because it meant that we had, like, the means to make a plan and not.
That was
get
the Cyclops
murdered.
Fortress, wasn't it?
That's right. I remember now. That's what I was going to talk about. So I have, you know, I've read a lot about, like, you know, people talking about spellcasting and blah, 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 and like, oh, it's so powerful. And whenever people talk about how powerful it is, often they bring up utility casting, right? And I've always sort of struggled with that because I don't know how to know what's going to happen in the future, you know? it sort of sounds like there's some groups who...
You should play the APs twice, then you'll know.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, that helped a lot. It felt like a lot of the people who were saying that were like, they had gaming groups where they would be like, all right, so now before we open this door, let's figure out what's on the other side first, and then they like come up with a whole plan. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a,
that sort of thing would really drag out a show.
Yeah, right.
It works much better in our four hour.
Even in our 4 hour segment, I feel like no one has the patience for that. back when I was playing a wizard, it was sort of like the thought of like me taking that much time to set something up. It was just like, no one would let me play anymore.
I always enjoyed doing some utility stuff. I played a shaman in Kingmaker, and I loved leaving spell slots open. And if need be, you know, taking 10 minutes and be like, okay, we know we're going to be flying to this location or going across this river or, you know, communing with the spirits and getting a spell that would be useful in that situation. Obviously, it doesn't work in like combat, but that was a lot of fun is leaving those open and having some, you know, some utility there. So I totally understand where you're coming from, but you want to know a little in advance before a combat starts, and you just never usually have that information of like who you're about to fight. Sometimes you do. Like sometimes you're like, oh, we're going into Sahugin territory. We know what's going on down there. Let's get this water breathing going.
I ran into that problem so much with Oz because, which was one of the reasons why I switched away from being a witch, because the witch is largely enchantment based and there's a lot of utility stuff there, but like so many times we would go up against someone and it's just like none of my spells are effective against this opponent, literally none of them, and it just got to the point where I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna stab people instead.
I have a host of teen players that are playing magic users. And they're infatuated with command and sleep as spells. Oh, yeah. I'm like, those are great. You can do those on weaker enemies very often, but they are both incapacitation spells. And I explain to them, it's like, it's only going to work for a natural one. And they're like, never mind. They understand.
Not me. Even.
Yeah, that would be dumb to build like an entire character around will saves or like something related.
Well, I'm saying they won't fail the save unless they roll a natural one for critical fail, which would be a fail. You know, otherwise they're getting better thing. Right. So we'll switch gears and talk Rebecca with Alaris. Alaris, a very important character for the podcast, an important character for you as a player to get you are our window into the world as both you are new to the Pathfinder system, second edition. Like all of us were, but also this style of game, the audience really, I think, latched on to Alaris as that the
point
character
of view character.
The one closest, you know, also doesn't know what to expect from this part of the world. Did you enjoy Rebecca playing that kind of, you know, doe-eyed, ready for anything type character?
Yeah, Alaris is me, and I am Alaris. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I set out to create a character that was enamored with piracy and the tales of the seven seas or whatever, the shackles or whatever. And I feel like I succeeded. I stuck to that to the very, very, very end. So, I feel like.
Do you think it was earned? Alaris did become like one of the most piratey pirates in the entire campaign. Became an admiral in her own right.
Yeah, and I think that there were several moments in the story that made that make sense, right? Like, it certainly wasn't manufactured. It was like she took over the reins when... Reins is the wrong word. I don't know ship terms, but when we were in the race, you know, in the yes. regatta, and I had to take over for Cassius and won the whole race and everything, like moments like that. Yeah, I think it was natural that she became, you know, she kind of realized her dream in not exactly in the way that she expected to. Mm-hmm. I think that she learned through the course of this. And I mean, again, we sort of talked about this in my one-on-one, like I think she realized that her naivete starting out, you know, there's a lot of cruelty in the world, and especially when you're dealing with pirates and the dangers along with the adventure of such a profession. So, yeah.
Alaris is the ultimate weeb. She was like dreaming of being a pirate and then went and became like the most piratey pirate possible. Became a super pirate. Yeah, I feel like the other characters, the other A-team characters, I kind of knew where they might end up towards the end of the series. I didn't really have an idea on Alaris, that she was like, I think the, you know, the most open-ended question. I think, you know, the only main idea I had was like she would find Olivier at some point, and you know, that might be the end of the story. But obviously you've surpassed Olivier in a lot of ways and made him proud in a whole bunch of others.
Didn't die.
Yeah, Alaris really grew up in mm-hmm. the course of the show, I feel like, and in the span of only 2 years, I feel like she gained a lot of maturity in that time.
Well, responsibility too.
And Captain, yes.
Pirate Council. Tyler. I think everyone assumed that Cassius might turn into, or you might show up to the table with like a dashing pirate hero character. Mm-hmm. But yeah. We intimated when we started the podcast, Cassius was a bad captain, maybe a little more
selfish captain.
Yeah, maybe more. Yeah, well, that, you know, that's a bad captain, too.
That's true.
But yeah, you wrecked a ship. You've lost crew. You survived a mutiny yourself. And then you flip the script and you mutinied somebody else.
Well, I learned from the best.
Why do you think the third time was the charm? The Tidebreaker crew was the one that whipped Cassius into shape and vice versa, succeeded like beyond maybe his wildest dreams.
Yeah, I mean, it was a reset button, right? You know, which is what it was supposed to be, was Cassius pursuing a dream and then having, you know, a literal hurricane disrupt that dream and forcibly reset his life, which immediately began with a press gang, you know. Mm-hmm. And so whereas with the main difference, I think, was with as previous crews where he assembled them and there was very little connection to the crew because he was so lost in his own pursuit for what he wanted. Because the, you know, because we all became close under this like brotherhood of we need to get out from the yoke and literal shackles of one, you know, Barnabas Harrigan, you know, there was a different connection there in Cassius actually cared for these people, and he didn't want to just sail them into their death, which was different for him.
Thanks for that, by the way. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot. So, you know, that was the main thing, is it was Cassius struggling to, and that was the whole story, was Cassius struggling as more and more responsibility was hefted his way, and having to stop thinking solely about like himself and his pursuits and think more about, you know, what was best for everybody, maybe. And there were like hiccups along, and I wanted there to be hiccups along that way. You know, I still wanted Cassius to sort of have that irresponsible selfishness on like a minor scale, where it's just like, okay, yeah, he's not going to make decisions that endanger people, but you know, he's going to steal the best wine for himself. He's still petty, like in a way. And so I wanted to keep that. But, you know,
And there were times where I wanted him to struggle with that, you know, like when we were on the Isle of Empty Eyes, there was like the dark Cassius arc where he was a bitter man.
I think we called it emo Cassius, but yeah, close enough.
Yeah, so it's like Peter Parker and when he yes. started slicking back his hair.
That was what my mind went to, was Cassius with that emo haircut.
Cassius doing the Peter Parker dance.
I forgot.
Venom Cassius for sure. So
yeah.
You know, I wanted that to be there. I think at about that point, you know, I think my original idea around that time was for Cassius to hoist most of the responsibility onto Alaris, and you know, really try to maintain his fluidity of freedom and his, you know, non-attachment that he had done before, which I think was my, especially after the regatta. It was such like the story set up such an easy transition of just like, you know, maybe Alaris is meant to be the one, but there's only so much you want to backslide a character when they have setbacks. Mm. It felt overly harsh to do so. And like, I struggled. I think the hardest thing was that like Cassius was obviously set up for like the typical hero's path, you know? And it was like one of those things where like I can embrace that and just enjoy that and have it, or I can try to pivot that in a different direction. And, you know, that was
we got to the end of the podcast and the voting came down to, you know, you making the decision whether or not you want to take on the responsibility of the Pirate King. And I honestly equally foresaw you saying, nah, Cassius doesn't want any more responsibility after this. He's going off and he's just going to be a one ship pirate and go on adventures, and Tessa Fairwind can deal with this or someone else.
I don't know. I was like, I don't think he could resist that part of adding. I don't think he could resist adding that to his story was in my head.
Well,
yeah.
Can Tyler resist or can Cassius resist? That's the question.
I was thinking more Cassius, but yeah, I don't know.
I want to know what percentage that decision was in your mind, Tyler. Was it Tyler or Cassius?
I really didn't want him to accept the crown. I'll be honest. I'm very much with what you thought, which was that like, you know, his whole thing, and I think, you know, something I tried to reiterate with that, you know, his personal philosophy was that piracy is about freedom. It's about people should be free to try to make their way the way they see fit. And, you know, it's hard to be free when you are constrained by the crown and everything that it represents. And so, you know, I definitely, if I were in Cassius' position, I definitely would have just thrown that crown into a pirate bidet and sailed off somewhere entirely different.
Probably you should have sold it. It's worth a lot of money, but yeah, throw it in a bidet. Got it.
In my head, he's more the sort of person who would wear the crown until he got bored. He's like, okay, I'm done.
Sure. I mean, maybe that's what happened. Maybe that is what happened.
In the moment, it just felt so good for this to be, you know, this grand, you know, kind of character shift that has been kind of building up where he does take full responsibility and does decide that, like, you know, hey, and I will say a little bit of like predestined birth, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where that was kind of happening there towards the end. A lot of what I thought I was going to do changed with the revelation of, you know, Bonefist being daddy. So, you know, that definitely changed my opinion. And I really did like the legacy that left behind and the story that it built, having Cassius retain the crown. So, you know, It was fun. I think if I had to do it all over again, I would have made a much more morally ambiguous Cassius.
And more tried to stick morally with that. Ambiguous.
he didn't do too much that was like not cool, you know. I think the most uncool thing that I can remember is when he found a ring of swimming and he just kept it for himself.
Oh, what an evil,
such a jerk, you know, but
technically, it was a pretty expensive ring.
It was at the time.
It was stupidly expensive.
But that's just one of those weird things from first edition, second edition. There were a lot of other things. Like, you know, I think I really didn't want to give up the sword to Sharkhead McDo. You know, I really didn't want to help out.
His name is Kendo, so you know.
Oh, I have a name.
Starkhead McDoofus, a.k.a.
Starkhead McDoofus was my father.
Me, Mr. McDoofus.
Yeah, I really didn't want to have help out Avamar Sornash, and you know, there were times like that where I wanted to be more
evil.
Yeah, but I'll be honest with you, if he had made that decision, Honto would have been behind him on that.
Well, that's
on
the thing.
On the Avamar one? Yeah, particularly.
And I want to stress this to, I think it's totally fine and fun to play what we would consider evil characters, so long as that evil is directed towards other evil bad guys, you know.
Sure.
If you're like, you know what, let's go steal all the horses from this evil horsemonger, I guess. I don't know what that's where the analogy went, but like, that's totally fine. Or, you know, let's burn the house down of this slave holder.
Well, I think what I would have done, what I would have done perhaps in, if I had to redo it, is, you know, that a lot of pirate ships in real life, the captain wasn't the deciding factor. They were democratic. Mm. So the captain got a say. And so I certainly could have made Cassius something like, well, you know, I think that as pirates, we should do this. And I knew I had three other players who would have had much more stronger moral compasses, especially Alaris and Honto. And so it would have been very easy to have him voice bad things, but be outvoted and have him be okay with that. And it would have probably played out, and you know, the end result would have been good. And I think it would have painted Cassius's character a little better in certain situations. But, you know, I'm still pretty happy.
Good.
Except for when, like, the fact that you killed him like three times. But, you know, that's okay.
Hey, man.
Hold on. Didn't Candoso kill him once?
Probably not. Probably.
I think he did.
Just singed a little.
I remember something about like a monster in a tree, and Vert's like, I'm gonna cast a fire spell. It'll be all right. Cassius has good reflexes.
That's something familiar.
Might have contributed, yeah.
I feel like I said that a lot.
Yeah.
And to he does have good reflexes. It's too bad that the player doesn't have good
dice.
Anything.
Arma. Yeah.
Dice karma. So we've talked a lot about the A-team, and we did something different on this podcast. Something I technically haven't done before, even though it has been a necessity in like some TPKs. But that's making a whole nother party of characters, but yeah, necessitated squared. By I was like, man, it's really gonna hurt our recording schedule if I kill a whole bunch of pirates and then you don't have someone to play the following week. So I was like, maybe we should make a B team. And indeed, that it's a terrible name, B team, but it's stuck to for shorthand.
What about the B team?
Pirate team, but they're both pirate teams. How do you differentiate P1 and P2?
P team 1 and P team 2.
But yeah, we added crew in. We added the crew in book 2, and there were many instances over the course of the entire podcast where I felt like they almost outshone your primary PCs in some ways, and that was never the intention. To steal the spotlight with the B team, I really did want to have them more in the background, bring them forward, you know, occasionally, but it eventually became like they were more part of the crew after book 4. Did you guys enjoy the process of making and playing another set of characters? Is this something?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was a lot of fun to sort of have these sort of different mixtures of abilities and things. And especially when we sort of started to recombine the groups when they finally got to be the same level.
Mechanically, it was interesting. Characterization wise, it was interesting.
Yeah.
I liked actually talking when I was playing Oz.
For the most part, there's not really a reason not to do it in Cosmic Crit, because most of those adventures, you are just crew members on a ship. And then it's like, okay, well, this week the away team is these four heroes. Or
like an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, well, exactly. It feels like it's even easier to do in that situation. But in this situation, you guys are members of a ship. And in the same way, you can be like, okay, well, these characters are going to go explore this part of the island, and these four are going to go explore this part of the island. And yet eventually just, you know, as we started playing it, I was like, wow, this is pretty easy, and, you know, did shake things up a little bit. So I think it is something I'm definitely going to look at in future tables, future podcasts. What about 8-person battles? Were they too? We only did a couple. Were they too crazy?
It was a lot. That was a lot.
Yeah.
I liked it more when you were like, you can activate one or the other. So it's okay. Still a 4-person battle, but it's like you can either be this one or this one. And so it was fun to be able to like, oh, and then this person jumps in. That's, when it was everybody, that was a lot.
Well, that reminds me of like every like television kind of like combat. Like I was watching Buffy the other day, and it's like, you know, she in like the first or second episode crashes the vampires like in the club that are like attacking everyone. And they, of course, attack her like one at a time. None of the vampires like gang up on her. She has like a one-on-one combat with all of the 7 vampires at one time. And it made me think, you know, like if you guys had 8 PCs and like only a few of them are fine at a time, it is like a tag team situation where you're like, okay, I just took a big hit, I'm gonna go back here, get him, Bartleby.
yeah
but I like it. I think if we make special rules like that, it would, you know, be more playable, more listenable, and might strain credulity. It's like, well, why isn't Candoso this turn of combat blasting a lightning spell? But I think
it would raise some things, like you know, in Final Fantasy when you have like a troop of like 9 people running around, but only 3 people fight at a time, and then if those 3 people pass out, it's game over. It's like, well, I got 6 other people. Yeah, some more
people back here. No,
but yeah, I mean, well, in that sense, the B team would be doing specifically what they were designed to do. Like, if your character gets knocked out of combat, it's not the end of the episode for you. You have someone else that you can call up for support.
You're in the A team now.
I think I do like kind of like boss combats. And we did it on the deck of the ship a few times where I described, like, you know, there's a bunch of lower level pirates that are fighting, like have boarded the Tidebreaker. So like B team is dealing with them over here, and your A team is fighting the captain. And, you know, in that situation, it would be very easy to be like, okay, well, you can just switch out characters if you want to. Now play Sharga instead. Yeah, I really did enjoy it. It wasn't the purpose of making those characters, but it turned into a whole different avenue. Mm-hmm. I was not ready, I will say, to like have as in-depth backstories for B team and like integrating them into the main story, but it was a challenge for you know, because like I said, I usually do a good amount of prep before a campaign starts, when like I already have all the books, and we had no inkling when we started Dead Men Roll No Crits that we're kind of 4 additional characters. So,
no,
definitely a big question. Final question for the night, as we're going long here, and a bit of a tie into our next episode. But if you guys had to make vastly different characters from the ones that you made already and replay this campaign again starting tomorrow or starting November 5th for whatever reason, what ancestry, background, class do you think you would want to play, you know? And this will be having full knowledge of what the campaign is there. It's not like you can memory wipe it, but maybe say 10 years pass and we play this again and you're like, I forget everything that happened. 10-year anniversary podcast. We just do another 40 years at that point.
Yeah. I don't know about it. All I know is there's one ancestry that I'm dying to play, which is whatever, I don't know the name. It's the spider people that can transform into humanoid form.
Anandi?
Yeah, that's all I want in this entire world is to play that ancestry, because I've when I was a kid,
spider it.
Yeah, when I was a kid, all like I oftentimes chose the druid because you got to, or any class, like you got to have a familiar, because usually you would get to have a spider familiar, and that's all I cared about, is I wanted a little spider familiar. So now I could be that familiar, which maybe would be a great character starter, is like I start as just a familiar for a wizard.
We might have something happen like that in our, we're about to start Chipper and I IRL seasons of ghosts, and someone wants to play a poppet character. In Japanese myth, there's like, you know, the living wooden shoes and like the umbrella that walk around, and there's rules for that in the new book. But I think our friend wants to play a mask, like a living mask, like, yes. And they might start out as just like a piece of clothing on another character, right? Something that the other character carries around. Well, right. What about the rest of you? Any other character ideas that you'd want to play? We'll plug our friends at Hideous Laughter Podcast, who started a second edition conversion of Skull and Shackles last year or earlier this year.
Oh, nice.
And they're playing five very different crew members than ours. They've got a Tengu champion, a Gripply ranger, Nagaji psychic, human thaumaturge, and a skeleton bard, who might be my favorite.
Skeleton bard is classic. That's
pretty wonderful.
Yeah,
comes
yeah.
with a xylophone.
He plays his ribs.
One of my daughter's favorite books for bedtime is called The Skeleton Pirate. That's nice. old picture book, and it's
very good.
It's fun. I'm very happy that she likes it.
Yeah, and in terms of ancestry, that I don't know. I am shameless furry trash. I'm sure people have sussed out at this point, so it'd probably be one of the many anthropomorphic races that are available.
Oh yeah, so many now. It's awesome.
I would. Well, they know where the money comes from.
you can just play an uplifted animal now.
Like at this point, yeah.
Well, that's in Howl of the Wind. You can mm-hmm. there are rules for just making up whatever animal you want to uplift, which is pretty cool. I had a character or a student in my who, you know, maybe he liked the Guardians of Gahul, but he's like, can I play an owl? I was like, yes, you can. Yeah. Go right ahead. I don't care.
In terms of like what I would play, I think maybe like a gunslinger would be really like definitely that would be an easy like
fit right in.
Charismatic, you know, cocky, quippy sort of character, something that would allow me to be a lot more vocal and a lot more, I guess, involved or exciting in the course of the story.
You want to play the dashing hero?
Or, you know, just a roguish type. Alternatively, like a wizard or a sorcerer, because I love the idea of being the cannonball that your pirate ship has in a fantasy setting. You know, like the whole, nice. Like... we're approaching an enemy ship. Fireball. I was like, that's pretty devastating.
Does the ship look flame retardant? Does it look weak to fireball?
So, yeah.
Rebecca, what about you? You made both a rogue and a barbarian for the campaign. Yeah, what else?
I guess I'm supposed to say I want to play a magic user, but...
No, you don't have to.
That would be a lie.
Yeah.
Rebecca's like, I would do a fighter. It's totally fine if you want to.
She's like, I just want more attacks of opportunity.
Yep. No.
Good.
Is there I was going to say earlier when we were talking about other crew members, I'm really sad that we didn't get to realize Alaris and what was the guy's name?
Your boyfriend?
Owlbear. No.
Owlbear Hearthstorn, yeah.
Because I wanted them to be sort of boyfriend. Like a... Arya, no, not boyfriend. Like
I'm
Arya,
joking.
The mountain kind of.
You could have played Owlbear if you wanted. You could have made him the barbarian.
Well, it was like we were talking about where. I mean, I guess she could have hijacked the NPC completely, but you know, they were.
I mean, I had his character point. built out. Like, I had a character sheet for him and stuff, but then he dropped behind in levels, and I was like, all right, well, I guess won't bring him along.
I guess it's Sharga only. Get killed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hard part about it.
Yeah. Jabert, are you making a third magic user if you play this again?
No, I think the next time I feel like I've done some high concept characters. Next time I'm just a deckhand. Just a deckhand. Like, I'm just swashbuckler, human, deckhand. Crowd is deckhand.
And so, don't choose wit. Just don't swabbing. Choose wit. Oh my gosh, choose fencer.
Oh yeah.
You have swabbing lore.
I think, right? Yeah. I do think that part of that is why I went into playing Making Honto, is because I was like, at the time, I was really burned out. I just finished a whole 6-book Starfinder campaign. We were doing 4-hour episodes every week. So I was burned out. And I was like, you know what? Sure, I'll play along. I wanted to play. And I was just like, I'll give myself a character that doesn't necessarily have to talk a lot. And then, like, when I finally started getting into it, I'm like, I can't justify him becoming more chatty. That was why on the last episode, I was like, you know, there's been some time. He has experienced life more in the way that he wanted to. He was more free. He was happier and was able to come back with a different personality. And I appreciated being able to do that.
Got a bit of a happy ending. Yeah, all your characters could change to a sight. And, you know, like I threatened you, you best be praying Paizo doesn't make another pirate AP.
Yeah.
better be praying, because we'll light this thing back up immediately.
I'll be back on your doorsteps like, please, I just want to relive the fantasy one more time.
I just need one more.
It will be fun, because it would probably be like 10 years later if we ever got back to this universe. But that's a whole what if scenario, because I don't see them making another pirate.
Did you say what if?
What if the scenario? Well, honestly, if they make another pirate AP, it's probably going to be in a different part of the world. You know,
I was giving you a segue, Patrick.
I know I was doing it myself, but a what if episode is coming next week, where we're not just going to talk about. Well, you guys can make up your own what if questions, but there are some that are suggested throughout the APs.
I already came up with two bangers, so
good. Yeah, we've already talked about them,
and I got two mashes.
The authors of the AP, hopefully. I did say at the start of the end of Dead Men Roll No Crits that shenanigans were allowed, so I brought this on myself.
Take that, Patrick.
Yeah, the authors ask questions like, you know, what if the PCs lose the Free Captain's Regatta? What if Tessa Fairwind became the Queen of the Pirates, and so on and so forth? And we'll talk about a little bit of each book next week. And that'll do it for this character discussion. We have some more. We're gonna dig deeper in past that for a few more episodes, but that's what's coming next week. Until then, thank you, Patreon pirates, freebie captains, everyone listening, and thank you to the four of you for making such fun characters over the years to play with. And we'll catch you on the next end of Dead Men Roll No Crits.
Yoo-hoo!
Bye.
Bye.